Live from the sidelines of the market, Investors Business Daily's Investing with IBD podcast is here for you. I'm Justin Nielsen, along with co-host Arusha Paris, and we're taking a look at some pretty strong plays here in the market coming up to the Thanksgiving holidays. Investors strategizing what's to come as trades wrap up for the year. So today is Tuesday, November 21st, so let's get right to it. Joining us today from the sidelines with his take on the exciting market action we're seeing is David Saito Chung, Deputy Markets Editor at IBD. Welcome, David.
Hey, Justin. Hey, Arusha. Great to see you guys again.
And Arusha, yeah, I'm just going to real quickly acknowledge, since this is kind of going to be a little bit of a sports theme, he's got his two helmets in the back. USC didn't really do that well against UCLA. I don't know what to say on that. Raiders lost too. Arusha's there licking his wounds, but forward to any particular Thanksgiving games?
Well, I'll say first that I'm going to have to replace that USC helmet with a Harvard helmet and join David.
Right. Okay.
Are they doing as well as USC?
They can't be doing worse. Yeah.
Well, here's a look at today's roster. We're going to take a look at, for kickoff, a little bit of what's going on with the market. Fed minutes were out today, how that's affecting things. For our halftime show, we'll also, take a look at some of the market indicators that are sports related, including the Super Bowl indicator. David's going to talk to us about that, and the World Cup indicator, and see if these have any value or do they just create blind spots for you. And then we're going to kind of finish off with the tailgate classics, our own little combine of stocks, including some sports related, Wingstop, DraftKings, and Microsoft. So, David, why don't you start us out and let's take a look at the kickoff in terms of NASDAQ composite, which has continued to be the leading index for us. We had this tight area right above 14,000, popped out of that, and it seems like it's making itself comfortable up there.
I agree. Look at that nice gap up we had on the tame inflation report. I believe that was the CPI not too long ago. And ever since then, it's been, six days now we've actually held above 14,000, which I think we consider to be a key psychological level, given that we had trouble holding above that in the summer.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, since you you have to report on basically everything that has to do with the market, why don't you talk to us a little bit about the Fed minutes? And, it seems like right now the focus has kind of shifted a little bit to not so much the rate hikes. There was that fear, are we going to get one more hike before the end of the year? But it seems like people are now looking forward to when will the cuts happen? 28% chance for March, a 50% chance or more for May. A lot of people thinking maybe June's a little bit more likely. Did the Fed minutes give any illumination on what's going on there?
I think it gave a little bit, Justin. I haven't had a chance to read the entire minutes, though, but judging by the commentary that I've seen, I think people have been very hopeful still that we will have at least a quarter point rate cut sometime in the first half of next year, and that could be followed by another one depending on what the future economic data shows us for 2024. But I think one analyst hit it on the nail, that they said that within the minutes from that recent meeting in which they decided not to raise interest rates, the word restrictive came up more often than not, something like at least six times in major conversations. So that pretty much is, I would suspect, what most of Wall Street thinks, that until we get core inflation down to really that 2% target that they really adamantly want to reach, that it's going to take time for any rate hike, cuts to ever appear. It's going to be more higher for longer. But I think right now, since November, the market is welcoming the fact that we're pretty much near or pretty much at the top of that rate hike cycle. And it's been a long cycle.
Yeah.
And yeah, quick. David, I think that, I guess I was kind of surprised to hear that there's hope that there's a rate cut in the first half of the year. It seemed to me that it's been maybe the Fed's been pretty consistent, like just saying that they're just going to keep it at these rates for a while and see what happens, right? Just slowly kind of adjust and maybe
and ready to do more if necessary. That seems to be what they keep on really emphasizing. True. We're ready to do more if we need to.
Yeah, but the cuts, it seems like they have to, kind of like what you were saying, Dave, with the core inflation, they almost have to see the economy start to wobble a little bit, mm-hmm. a bunch of layoffs start to happen before they say, okay, maybe we should cut.
And let's not forget, exactly. Like earlier in the year, it was, you know, the expectation was for cuts before the end of 2023, you know, like coming in the last quarter. So, I mean, this has certainly been kicked down the road a little bit.
Oh, without question. And, you know, speaking of wobbly action in economy, Arusha, I think you're right that right now there are some signs of small wobbles, like, for instance, in the manufacturing side. The certain data from the ISM shows that we're in contraction mode. Some of those Fed regional manufacturing surveys show that we're no longer growing in terms of output. So I guess now the focus is really going to be on jobless claims on a weekly basis. The 4-week moving average has been rising a little bit, but, you know, we still haven't seen anywhere any indication that, as you said, there could be massive layoffs. And there'll be obviously adjustments with the UAW strike, but now that seems to be getting resolved. So the question is, will we see a gradual rise in unemployment? That would be ideal, I think, for the Fed, because that would cool down wage growth and also just get us ever closer to that 2% holy grail, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and David, just to quickly add to that, it's kind of interesting in some of these earnings calls, you're hearing a number of these companies beating on earnings. But it seems like a lot of these companies are saying we're lowering our revenue, or the revenue is going to start to slow down. And so maybe in the end, even if the Fed keeps the rates as is, they might accomplish it just with that kind of, with the consumer slowing down, not spending as much. And now the companies start to see the revenue slow down over the first half of the next year.
Oh, that's another good point. At the same time, you know, I think the market is also feeling positive about goods inflation. Like, we see crude oil still below $80 a barrel. We've had a little bump up. Gold made some noise today, you know, on our IB live show, for instance. We talked a lot about gold hitting 2000 an ounce and what reaction the stock market is giving. It's very complex, right, to really forecast the economy, right? Some economists are paid full time to just examine every little move and shake in the economy. We think, well, focus on what the Fed is saying, what the interest rates are doing, and then what the market is doing, because you're going to get real time, real money decisions made by millions of participants. I think, at least from that point of view, the market is optimistic that we are going to have either a soft landing and not a deep recession for now. The other point I want to add is that, you know, I was looking at some numbers regarding earnings, and since interest rates really have a big impact, just got a comment from Rob Swank, a Commonwealth Financial Network, a big RIA firm based in the Northeast. And among the S&P 500 companies that have reported, about 94% have now reported. The 82% of those that have reported have beaten their earnings estimates for Q3, and that's 8 percentage points above the 10-year average. So here again, you know, we're still getting earnings, obviously today, yesterday, and tomorrow with retailer earnings. But the earnings picture also helps, has been helping, I think, this Q4 rally. Mm-hmm.
Do you think some of that was, companies kind of seeing the writing on the wall and lowering some of their estimates ahead of time to just kind of soften the blow, make it a little bit easier to hit those targets? What's been your take on, you know, just the reactions? Because, you know, earnings has gotten, you know, I mean, we were seeing, it seemed like 20% moves up or down, that there was like almost no in between. But what's been your take on this last earnings season now that we're kind of at the tail end?
Well, I got to say, and our show is going to be also talking about biases, you know, especially through the Super Bowl and the World Cup indicator that I wanted to share with everyone. But from what I've seen, you know, I don't look at every single earnings report for all S&P 500 companies, but the ones I've been focusing on have been able to keep earnings forecasts and expectations under control and give, you know, modest outlooks for sales and then set that up for a potential beat. So, you know, giving conservative guidance still is very important, I think, Justin. And the numbers I've seen, especially among companies that really get high ratings on IBD and make the screens on Marcus Smith, have shown that there are more than a bunch, you know, more than several handfuls of companies that have that kind of wonderful fundamentals that can help drive big institutional sponsorship and therefore strong price gains that can beat the stock market.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I also just wanted to touch on briefly is if we could maybe put up the 10-year treasury yield, because yeah. This was, you know, such a damper on market action, and, you know, especially the big rise that we saw was just really hard for a lot of stocks to get traction, especially on the small cap area and everything. Certainly what's coincided with this really powerful rally that we've had in November has mm-hmm. been a really big drop in the 10-year treasury yield, which a lot of people were saying was doing kind of the heavy lifting for the Fed.
That's right.
Do you think there's a concern that if this is no longer, you know, fulfilling that duty, that, you know, where does that leave us?
That's a great question, Justin. Look at, first of all, on your chart there with the CBO treasury yield having had an incredible move, right, from this, I guess it was springtime. And it wasn't until the interest rates got to 4.5% to 5% that the market started feeling some heat in recent months. But I think we're having an adjustment here. I think the treasury yield market or the treasury bond market is reflecting the progress that the Fed has made with its rate hikes, and people are giving the Fed more credit for now just kind of stepping to the sidelines, waiting to see how much progress is going to be made on inflation after one of the most rapid increases in interest rates in history.
So, David, what about the breadth in the market? We've started to see it improve a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now, in the beginning, that, you know, one of the criticisms when you had the follow-through day, not a lot of stocks participating, but the most important stocks were participating, right? The larger cap tech stock that, as we saw in the beginning of the year, can drive up the whole market. What are your feelings now about the breadth? Has it started to improve enough that it makes you more optimistic about this rally?
Irusha, personally, I would say yes, with a capital Y. And one reason is that I've lately really tried to track the number of stocks that are up in price in heavy volume versus down in price in heavy volume, as we show on the homepage of Marcus Smith. And so on October 30th, for instance, there were 488 stocks up in volume, 161 down in volume. So almost pretty much 3-1 in terms of those stocks up versus down. And this is 2 days before Jay Powell and the Fed decision to leave rates unchanged on November 1st. That week of October 30th, from October 30th until November 3rd, the amount of stocks hitting, you know, rising for the day in heavy volume just totally swamped the number of stocks down in volume. The most extreme examples were November 2nd, 1,216 stocks up, 150 stocks down, and these are all trading above average turnover. So that's like, I would say maybe 8-9-1, you know, winners versus losers in volume. And then the very next day, November 3rd, to cap off that really strong first up week of the past 3 weeks, 1,098 stocks up, 120 stocks down. These are numbers in terms of market breadth that we haven't seen in a long time. And Therefore, when we look at the advanced decline line, as Justin and Arusha are showing on the screen, yes, for sure, the market doesn't look super healthy in terms of new highs versus new lows or in terms of advanced decline line, but we've definitely seen a change in the behavior, I think, of institutional investors around the time that the Fed news came out.
And we're seeing that behavior in breakouts working a little bit better, right?
Yeah.
Without question. Without question. Yes, we're seeing those, the breakout screen, right? And Marcus Smith, the stocks near a pivot point really light up. It's like finally someone put in the plug for the pinball machine and the lights are starting to show up now.
Mm-hmm. One more thing I wanted to ask you, Dave, we're going to do a little plug for Leaderboard here. Leaderboard, of course, is a product that Investors Business Daily has that kind of gives ideas for, you know, investable opportunities and kind of gives a sense of how you might manage a portfolio. And we do that with a model portfolio, which you are one of the managers of that model portfolio. There was a lot of times when you're out of the market, you know, and you're on the sidelines in cash, it's great because you're sitting out the negative action, and you know, hopefully you're able to get back in soon enough to participate when the market does eventually turn. But sometimes that does take a while.
Right.
You were really, really aggressive very early on this rally, and as a result, November, is up almost 10% for this model portfolio of Leaderboard because the exposure got ramped up so quickly. What made you do that? What was kind of the driving force that allowed you to be that aggressive and have some extra confidence, especially given how many rallies we've had that didn't work? Even August,
good point.
August 29th follow through day didn't work. October 6th follow through day didn't work. Was there something different this time?
Well, first of all, I don't want to take a lot of the credit or for heaven's sake, full credit for, the nice moves that have been seen in Leaderboard since late October. But I do want to mention a few points that might help our listeners be better prepared or stay on top of their investing game, right? And one is, yes, we all were aware that we had these waves of sell-offs that started, in June, July, then August, September, and then October. It was rough sledding, especially October. But the interesting thing was that, we've had experience studying the market near the end of a rate hike cycle. I just personally kind of felt that we were getting ever closer to that stage. Secondly, even though the breadth was very poor, we were seeing high quality stocks with great IBD ratings that deserved not necessarily to be part of a active portfolio, but to be on a watch list. So at one point, in September and October, we had close to 8 to 10 stocks on the watch list of Leaderboard in our model portfolio. And they were ready to go if the market was going to give a follow through signal. And the reason why we could add those stocks is, one, they were doing something very innovative. We're going to talk about DraftKings, DKNG soon as a good example. They're relatively newer stocks, or they have something new going on with them. Obviously, Microsoft and AI. And these stocks were trading relatively close to good trend line buy points, trading above moving averages like the 50-day and the 200-day, forming the right side of the basis. So it sort of felt like under the lid of the market, in terms of looking at the major averages, but there were some good things cooking. So I think that was a factor, and just the experience. Our team, which includes you, of course, Justin, Chris Gessel, our chief content officer, and Ken Shreve, who's a senior markets writer, as well as we have some other market team people who assist in the operation of Leaderboard. We have that experience of going through many different cycles that are affected in large part by what the Fed does.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to take a quick time out. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some of these ways in which sports indicators might help you with your investing or potentially hurt it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Market Smith will give you a huge edge in the stock market. Better stocks, bigger profits.
Market Smith is the top research platform for IBD.
It's just the best tool for individual stock selection.
Everything within Market Smith is designed to bring those best stocks to the surface.
It does a lot of the work for you of filtering down to the potential leaders.
It's when you take the training wheels off and you're ready to invest on a more professional level.
Market Smith will help you take control of your investment life.
If you want to get serious about investing, start your membership today.
Welcome back to the Investing with IBD podcast. It's our halftime report here with Justin Nielsen and Arusha Pierce. And our special guest this week is David Saito Chung, Deputy Markets Editor at Investors Business Daily. So, David, just in sticking with the sports theme, we've got Thanksgiving coming up. A lot of folks are going to be eating their turkey and watching sports. You've kind of talked a little bit about how there are a lot of sports-related indicators that have to do with the market. And I remember years ago, Chris Gessel, our chief content officer, came up with one at a level four seminar that we were giving, and it was the Lakers indicator. What indicators are you following nowadays?
Well, you know, given the Thanksgiving season and the sports, and both you guys love sports too, I thought, why don't we dig into two of them? One is more well-known than the other. Let's start with the Super Bowl indicator. And I was just doing a little reading about it and just found out, according to one of our former full-time staff writers, who wrote a very nice article on AARP's website, it actually came aboard in the late 1970s. A sports writer from the New York Times, Leonard Coppett, came up with this Super Bowl indicator in which, according to the most recent research on Super Bowl history and the stock market history, that the Dow Jones Industrial Average has finished a year higher 82% of the time when an NFC conference team wins the Super Bowl. And on those years when the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up, the average return is 11.4%. So imagine what the S&P or the NASDAQ might have done on some of those years too. And Adam Schell, the writer of the story, quoted research from CFRA. And so I was kind of curious about, like, well, does it really still hold water? For sure, you know, in 1967, guys, and the first Super Bowl where you had the NFL team and the AFL team play together, the Chiefs lost to the Green Bay Packers. The Packers won 35-10. That was an NFL team. Well, lo and behold, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 15.2% for that year. And then if I remember correctly, the Packers won again the second year in a row, right? And in that year, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 4.3% in 1968. So at the 68 Super Bowl, the Packers defeated the Raiders, and I know. Yeah. Arusha, I know you.
That was a tough one for me.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. 68. That was a tough one to watch.
Well, there's been a lot of glory days for the Raiders as well too. But anyway, two years in a row, the Packers and the NFL won, and the stock market was up. Well, actually, Justin, when you look at recent history, that theory, right, that the NFC team brings a bullish year for the market has kind of fallen apart a little bit. In fact, just go to, for instance, last year, 2022, the Rams in LA edged past the Cincinnati Bengals 23-20. And look what happened during that year for the market. Pretty bad market. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the Patriots won a bunch over the last 20 years too. So I think the markets for the most part in the last 20 years have done pretty well, right? I mean, we had
some pretty bad
years, but for the most part, yeah.
You would have thought too that, well, of course, 2020 with COVID, that was a strange year, a volatile year for the market. The Chiefs edged out the San Francisco 49ers 31-20. Yeah. The Dow was only up 7% for that year, but as we know, there were some amazing growth stock winners during that 2020 run up from the lows of late March. So I thought it was kind of fun just to kind of poke at this indicator, right. and that is while it's fun to talk about it, right, and you kind of reminisce about certain Super Bowl events and what the market did, and I think it's probably in your best interest to really just stay focused on what really matters in the market is supply and demand. It's how do equities respond to changes in interest rates and earnings. I think those are three of the big factors. The fourth biggest factor probably being the individual teams within the stock market. You want to go for the ones that can actually spike that football in a touchdown in terms of really strong earnings and sales and having a good product and good service, good management, good quarterbacking too.
And yeah, to a certain degree, there's the industry groups, that kind of act as your teams, right? Because a lot of times you will have certain industry groups that become kind of the leaders. And, if you can get a nice player on one of those industry, in one of those top industry groups, then that's where you can really do well. Arusha, you were going to add something in there.
No, I mean, the parallels, and we've talked about this before in some other episodes, the parallels between football, investing in football, especially like fantasy football, it's pretty crazy. And one of those parallels is finding the best industry groups, and you find the best players, find the best teams, find the best players. It's all very similar. And you're using stats to kind of do that. You're using history, a lot of times the best players who did the previous year, the chances are they're going to probably do pretty well the current year. But you do want to manage your risk too. If you start seeing stuff falling apart or players being traded, you might want to cut some of those those teams out of there.
I like that. I like both of what you guys said too, and what you said, Arusha, particularly reminds me of what Branch Rickey said about trading baseball players, right? Branch Rickey, famous Brooklyn Dodgers manager, and he said it's far better, right, to trade a great player 1 year early than 1 year late.
That's true.
So I think when it comes to selling, your best stocks or locking in those gains, right, because paper gains are just simply paper gains, you definitely want to sell into strength, so to speak. And so I'm glad we're approaching, the sports metaphors again. Is now a good time, Justin, to also talk about my experience with the World Cup?
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's bring all that experience to bear.
let's do it. So I would love it if you could go to the S&P 500 and go to a long-term monthly chart and maybe include the years that go back to, say, the late 80s. I don't know if you got the entire...
I'm going to zoom out here.
There you go. Okay, great. So
78,
My first foray... as a journalist, I actually came as a sports writer and sports editor for Kyoto News Agency in Tokyo, Japan. So Kyoto is very much like the Associated Press here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And that was in 1994. I helped cover the Hiroshima Asian Games, kind of like the Asian version of the Olympics. That was in 94. And then from 95 to 98, I was given this incredible opportunity to cover two Olympic Games, the 96 Olympics in Atlanta, the Nagano Winter Olympics in 98. And then for most of 1998, after the Nagano Olympics, I covered the Tokyo stock market. The Tokyo stock market in 1998 was a shambles. It was like being with the team that was 0-16 in the NFL or 1-15. You had a lot of
injuries. Let's say.
A lot of injuries. Exactly. It took a long time for, and it's still a stock market, the Nikkei 225, for instance, in Japan, on the mend after hitting its highs of December 1989 near 39,000. But when I was this cub reporter for the stock market in 1998, there were some big news, obviously. The Russian ruble crisis, Russia defaulting on its debt, which led to the collapse of long-term capital management, a hedge fund filled with Nobel Prize-winning economists and John Meriwether, a famous trader from Salomon Brothers. That hedge fund was so important to the financial system that Alan Greenspan called together the heads of, like, I think 20 to 25 Wall Street banks and said, we got to save this fund, otherwise, Wall Street could go down with it. So, when you look at 1998, it was a pretty steep bear market. The S&P 500 from my calculations, was down as much as 22.4%. So this is 1998. And then eventually we had a nice turnaround, a follow-through, a market bottom in October 1998 with the follow-through. But that was also the year when I was covering the Japanese stock market, and the, you know, Japan's financial system had its issues as well. Well, while we were, you know, covering what was pretty a pretty dark and gloomy era for stocks all around the world, you had the World Cup in which France won its first of two World Cups in modern history. They defeated Brazil 3-0, and I think it was held in France, if I'm not mistaken.
It was
that year, 1998. Well, the market came back. Just like the France was victorious, and the market always does come back, right? Because it has that upward bias, but it didn't come without, you know, some severe damage to what happened in the market. Same thing happened in 1994. We had a U.S. stock market that didn't really crash, but it was a long bear market in terms of time. You know, the S&P was down 9.7%. The Nasdaq was down 14% in 1994, but it took more than a year. As Greenspan and company at the Fed decided to raise interest rates to cool down inflation. So 1994 was, you know, a difficult year for those who were going long in stocks. And then we had, you know, the U.S. World Cup in that same year. Brazil won on penalties. 4 years before that, 1990, when Germany defeated Argentina, that was another bear market. That was a tough year for equities. The S&P was down 20%, so it was a legitimate bear market. And then let's go all the way back to 2002. That was a very unique year for World Cup history, where South Korea and Japan co-hosted the soccer event for the first time. Well, that was a very, very bad year for stocks, right? The S&P down 34.5%. off its year-to-date high of 2002, but it also fell more than 50% from the 2000 peak, and that was obviously during the dot-com bubble. All in all, I just, having that history and those memories made me think about in the future, Justin and Arusha, that okay, is it a World Cup year? You better batten down the hatches. You better. Well, you know,
we have three more years.
Yeah, exactly. Three more years. And look what happened in 2022. We had a glorious World Cup victory for Argentina with Messi 2022. But boy, that was like the only the bright spot we saw in terms of equity markets. Like, look what happened as the Fed raised interest rates so rapidly to try to quell inflation. But all in all, I feel like, well, it's fun here again, just like with the Super Bowl indicator, to talk about sports and these, how these coincidences happen between major events in sports and major events in stock market. What we also have to, I guess, appreciate is that while the market has these this long-term upward bias, well, every 3 or 4 years, you're probably bound to get some kind of reset, right? That's what a correction in a bear market is. It just so happens to be when I was so interested in both sports and covering the stock market in the 90s, that those two things aligned at the same time. And then when I joined IBD in 99 and got to know more about the IBD methodology and really looking at a lot of charts together with folks like Justin and Arusha and Chris Gessel and Bill O'Neill and other in-house money managers who work for Bill, we came to understand that, yes, history doesn't obviously repeat itself perfectly, but it does rhyme. And you generally have these cycles where you're going up 2-3 years and then you have a down year to sort of get rid of that speculative froth and let stocks reset, let new IPOs come to the fore and let new leaders come in. So I think it's very important for the long term to understand that the market really hasn't changed in that way. We have these cycles. We should respect them, and and rely on that as something that will continue, rather than the NFC Super Bowl team won, right. The AFC Super Bowl team won, or you know, as a World Cup event. And before I forget, one thing also I wanted to add about the Super Bowl indicator, isn't it funny that you know, the New York Times writer Leonard Coppett noted that, yes, NFC team wins, we're going to have a stock market, a good winning stock market, right? Well, you know, what if it was the AFC team that won and the market was up 82% of the time? I think it really doesn't really matter, because the truth of the matter is, it's the stock market does tend to go up most of the time, you know, 82% of the time. That sounds about right. So it's just like kind of putting two kind of coincidental things together into one, and whether there's any causation or not, well, it's fun to talk about.
Yeah. Well, and it's also one of these things where, as humans, we tend to look for patterns, right? Yeah. And so there is this kind of bias that we have looking for meaning sometimes when there isn't, you know, because again, who could make a causation relationship between the football team and the market, you know? But, you know, Jeffrey Hirsch, of course, he's been on a number of times from the Stock Traders Almanac, and, you know, the presidential cycle, you know, there is certainly data that supports, you know, a tendency for action mm-hmm. based on the presidential cycle and seasonality in terms of months and, you know, where you're at in that presidential cycle. So I guess the end result is there's a lot of things that people can look at, a lot of patterns that they can find. And, you know, there's those patterns that have maybe, you know, withstood the test of time, and those that are, okay, you have a sample size of four, and maybe that's not enough to really really build a pattern off of. But at the end of the day, David, what is it that investors should look at the most?
You know, I take the cue from Bill O'Neill, especially in his book, How to Make Money in Stocks. If you want to learn about fish, look at fish, watch fish, examine fish, right? If you really want to know the stock market, really examine what the stock market is really doing. And those are the facts. And our producer on the show is making another good point. It's like, you know, he's talking about correlation is not the same as causation. I completely agree with that. Causations, there are certain causes, you know, for certain moves in the market. And we have to, you know, really try to understand it as quickly as we can when the market is making a big move. But I try to really keep it simple. And I think both of you guys do the same. We look at the major averages. We look for any change in trend. We look for other signals that the market has more fuel in the tank in the form of good stocks breaking out of bases, making new highs, pulling back in lighter volume, sector rotation into stronger hands in the market, so to speak. And right now, you know, if we fast forward to today, we're seeing relative weakness in staples and utilities, banks, and more dynamic industry groups, you know, consumer spending, tech, med tech, and to some degree, you know, certain new home construction areas doing much, much better. So we have to follow strength. I think that's really important.
Excellent.
Yeah, there used to be.
Oh, go ahead.
There used to be a saying that would hold true, I think, in sports. I don't know if it necessarily holds true anymore, unfortunately. But defense wins championships, right? Mm-hmm. In soccer, I still think that. I don't know if necessarily in football that applies anymore. But I still think in investing that is a huge key. Manage your risk. Live to play another day. Survive, because even though, as we saw with these World Cups, they come every 4 years, you can get some pretty devastating corrections that if you are not managing a risk, even though they don't come around that often, they can wipe you out. And so you have to always have enough money, have enough principal to live to play another day. Mm-hmm.
And absolutely. Minimizing those drawdowns, you know, that's how you get the compounding effect. Mm-hmm. If you get too big of a drawdown, guess what? It's tough to compound off of negative drawdowns. So, yeah.
I feel like that those two comments could be the kernel for another future podcast, because, you know, the defensive side of the investing game is ultra important. I agree. And then also, as Justin, you mentioned, managing your risk so that you don't come too far off your the peak in your portfolio. That's something that I'm really, really paying close attention within my own investing. Mm-hmm.
Well, hey, we're going to take a break real quick. When we come back, we're going to do our tailgate report, kind of some scouting of the stocks that might be worth putting on your radar. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Join the Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
Welcome back to Investing with IBD Podcast. It's Justin Nielsen here and Arusha Paris, along with our special guest this week, David Saito Chung. And now we've got the tailgate report for you. And we're going to do a little bit of scouting for some of the best stocks out there. And a lot of these are actually, all of them are currently featured on the leaderboard product that we mentioned earlier, David being a manager, co-manager of that model portfolio. So why don't we start with Wingstop, because you can't have a tailgate without some good barbecue. What's your take here on Wingstop? I mean, this is on the watch list right now for leaderboard. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we look at the chart here, look at pattern recognition, we've got this blue shaded area that is showing buy zone, but why is it not on right now?
Well, it really had, first off, an amazing move on earnings, Justin. You can see with that 53% EPS jump for the third quarter's 26% sales growth, it really moved so fast that if you weren't watching it carefully, it just got away from you, like a runaway, a wide receiver catching that ball in between the zone and no one catching them, right. It's you have to be right there, right? And so we had been very active in adding a lot of stocks to leaderboard as Wingstop was shaping that right side of the base. Expected a little bit of pullback, it never really did, right? And so now at this point, even though it's not a member of the actual leaders list on leaderboard, we are definitely going to be looking for some new entry points. And stock going from 150 to over 230 in such a little time, you got to expect some kind of pullback, a healthy pullback that will give us a second chance.
Yeah. Now a lot of what we look at is again back to the team. You know, who else is on the team and the industry group here? Retail restaurants. You know, first of all, you got the retail sector has been a little bit rough lately. Retail restaurants, mm-hmm. 140 out of 197. But there are these pockets within each of these retail groups that seem to be doing something so different from the rest of the team. So is this a case of a great player being on a bad team?
That's a good way of putting it. And yeah, I think when you look at the numbers as we show on Marcus Smith, first of all, one of the most important areas of that chart is that top left corner with the annual earnings. And you can see from 58 cents a share in 2016 to $1.09 a share, even during the COVID year, right? Almost doubling from there and then strong growth the next several years. We are expecting 31% earnings per share growth for this year, $2.39, and then another 18% increase for 2024. And generally, when you go a full years out, you're going to generally see conservative forecasts by both the company and Wall Street analysts. This is a rock star, a real MVP within the restaurant group. Now, of course, trends change and habits change regarding food. I think Wingstop, as well as CMG, Chipotle, have really mastered the convenience, have mastered the ability to maintain high profit margins. So with increasing sales growth comes even bigger earnings growth to the bottom line. What's also benefited Wingstop is lower chicken wing prices. They also have now innovated and introduced the chicken breast sandwich, which I want to try as soon as possible. It looks really good on the commercials. I wouldn't mind having that during a halftime, break, watching sports. It just looks so good, and I'm a big chicken fan and willing to try Wingstop. I know it's important also, right, as an investor, to really know the product that the company's selling and have some experience with it. So I think this is very, very important in terms of, you know, judging what the stock is doing. And back to your original question, I feel like I didn't really properly answer it, Justin, regarding, you know, the chart action. For sure, you know, we are just a little bit above the left side high of this cup. But remember, this stock had such a big move, especially after it crossed technically that 200-day moving average. And you look at the chart action from late September to early November, it almost feels like it was like kind of like a little stealth mini flat base that formed inside that cup. And knowing Arusha's expertise and research looking into earnings reactions, it wasn't quite a gap up on the earnings, but it was such a strong move. You really had to pay attention. Right, Arusha?
Yeah, I mean, this was in many ways, it was a character change, which is a lot of times those earnings gap ups. One thing I wanted to add to David's talk about the chicken sandwich, what kind of appealed to me on the chicken, them introducing the chicken sandwich, is for just chicken wings, people aren't going to necessarily go every day, I don't think, and eat chicken wings. But people will go every day and eat a chicken sandwich, right, for lunch and things like that. And so that in itself would bring customers probably more consistently there. And I think that was one of the interesting things. And then the other thing, David, I think that you were getting towards with the cost of the chicken wings, with the chicken sandwich, since it's more boneless, I think they can manage their costs better versus the chicken wings, where they're much more susceptible just to the regular chicken prices. So I think that was another reason where it would enable them to control their costs more just by doing the chicken sandwich and kind of growing that as a larger percentage of revenue.
That is interesting.
Great stuff. Well, let's go ahead and head to the sideline real quick. And if you go to most football game sidelines, you're going to see Microsoft products right there with you. The Surface seems like it's omnipresent a lot of times. So Microsoft, of course, does a lot more than just providing paraphernalia for football games. The big thing is about AI, and there's certainly been kind of this recent shakeup with the OpenAI and some benefits potentially for Microsoft there in terms of picking up some extra talent. What's your take on Microsoft? This has been one of the big leaders for a while now, and it's one of the few stocks that's right there at new high territory.
Incredible action, and glad, Justin, you're showing that weekly chart action. You really get a full appreciation for the amazing performance it's had over the past 5 years and plus. It's one of the first tech stocks, right, really, to hit all-time highs, even though the NASDAQ has yet to reach its 2021 peak. And I think we were very keen on this one because, one, you had that theme, very easy to understand theme. Wow, they're going to really try to grow their franchise with a new feature that is AI. And in a beneficial way, the stock got closer to the high of its recent base more quickly than others. We spotted a buy point when it crossed basically a trend line that we drew across the base, as well as a double bottom entry. I think that double bottom entry arguably was around $340.86. This stock joined the leaderboard watch list on October 30th in anticipation of a potential game-changing move for the market on November 1st, which is when we had the Fed decision. So since then, it was pretty much a no-brainer, really, to execute the play, so to speak. Already on the watch list, we already had confidence in the technical action, the numbers in terms of fundamentals. And then it joined leaderboard at around $345.25. That was a half-size position. Think of that as maybe putting 5 to 6% of your entire growth stock portfolio in a stock like Microsoft. It continued to act well, and then we decided recently to add a little more to that winning position by pyramiding up in MSFT. That extra quarter position was added not too long ago, November 16th. That was last week at 375. So with the pullback we have right now, the quarter add is just down just a couple points. We're not too concerned about that. And especially with something like Microsoft, we wouldn't really want to focus on that weekly action and not get too concerned about the daily fluctuations.
Right. And it's also worth mentioning that, Microsoft was actually one of the 2021 leaders. So this was kind of a revisit for 2021. Microsoft was on, I think, pretty much the entire year. If this were an actual portfolio, it would have been a long-term capital gain because it came on in 2020 and was held through most of 2021.
You know, what's kind of interesting also with Microsoft is it does have accelerating earnings. It has accelerating sales and accelerating margins. So you almost have the triple whammy right there going on. So that is, I should also say I do own some shares of Microsoft, but especially with the news events of this past weekend, it is, before they were kind of working in partnership with OpenAI, and they're still going to, but now it seems like they're just grabbing like almost everything there, all the talent, stuff like that. So it's going to be really interesting to see what comes out of this. But they have, it seems like they're becoming a major, major player in the whole AI realm.
Yeah, those are good points. And for full disclosure, I am also a personal holder of some shares in
as
Microsoft. let's run the gamut here, guys. And when I look at the leaderboard chart, for instance, one notable piece of info was that in the latest quarter for September, which is their fiscal first quarter, they beat earnings estimates by nearly 13%. And for a company that already is a $1 trillion company, that's pretty amazing. You know, you're building upon huge numbers. The law of large numbers eventually gets to all stocks, right? But the company has done really well, partly because of cloud computing and what Satya Nadella did after especially even before he became CEO in 2014, he was head of the cloud and enterprise computing business of Microsoft for something like 8 years. And now they're going into new frontiers. It's really, really exciting.
Yeah, and that's definitely something that Microsoft sets itself apart in terms of. A lot of companies would be by the wayside. I mean, let's just look at Cisco. Cisco is still used a lot, and a lot of companies, a lot of businesses still use Cisco products, but this never recovered back to its highs from 2000. You know, I mean, it's still not there. Microsoft took 15 years to do it, but it did it, and it did it because of that cloud computing. And now, arguably, a lot of people are looking at AI as its third act of, you know, hey, this is what can drive the next move in Microsoft, potentially in the same way that the operating system did in the 90s and cloud computing did in the teens here. We'll see if AI is what drives it forward in the 20s. So yeah, that'll be really interesting to see. And certainly one of the conversations we had on IBD Live this morning, Ed brought up, that talent grab that they're doing. It's kind of like they're getting the company without having to pay for it. They're getting a lot of that talent without having to deal with antitrust, without having to deal with an acquisition. If it kind of plays out this way, so that'll be a little bit of an interesting soap opera to watch. Let's go ahead and round this out with a look at DraftKings, because what would sports be if you don't have a something riding on the game, and DraftKings is definitely there to help you out with that. Put a little extra fun and skin in the game, if you will.
Not for California DraftKings people, though.
Not yet.
We're
not yet.
Not yet.
Well, not yet. That's right. It's like the cannabis market too, right? Certain states have approved use for recreational,
more and more,
not just medicinal, right? Yeah, and the states still have power to make things to move and shake things. I'm glad we're ending with DKNG. This is also a key member of the leaderboard currently right now, with the leaderboard portfolio almost 97-98% invested. DKNG is a full-size position, so we're saying as much as 11-12% of your portfolio deserves DKNG shares. So it's a big bet, if you will, on a company that's had quite a roller coaster of a ride, especially if you look at a monthly chart or a weekly chart. But it seems like with their fantastic sales growth and ability to also become really, really strong in the newly liberated markets in terms of the states and daily sports wagering. It's a very exciting company. We added it to the watch list initially this year in May 15th, and it became part of the portfolio. The market then got a little bit choppy, and we eventually exited that stock, DKNG, in mid-August. But we didn't keep our eye off the ball, figuratively, with DKNG, formed two bases kind of next to each other that had kind of elements of a double bottom. And that week where it reported earnings, you can see it was just a game-changing week, up 27%. Volume was well above average. It was the highest in about 2.5 months. And the stock broke a trend line, guys. Once it started breaking that trend line, right after the earnings announcement, we quickly moved it from the watch list when it was added on September 14th to a half-size position on November 3rd. So we were watching it very, very closely after it joined the watch list on September 14th. And a little more than 2 weeks later, at 6:47 a.m. Pacific time, that's just 17 minutes into the stock market, we got a nice entry point, $31.14, and then raised it to 3/4 and eventually a full position. So hopefully this will turn out to be one of those stocks that we can hold at least 8 weeks and see whether the game blossoms into something bigger.
Yeah, I should say that I do own shares of DraftKings. What kind of surprised me is that these guys still don't have earnings, and they're not projected to have earnings for a while. But it in a number of other ways, it does have that kind of O'Neill characteristics that you look for, right? A new kind of trend that's going on. It is pretty game changing for a lot of people, and they're one of the dominant players. In addition with FanDuel, I think those are the two big players in here. And then technically it's been trading pretty well, volatile, like a lot of these newer type of stocks, but strong breakout. And as David said, a game-changing kind of earnings event.
Yeah. To add just quickly upon that, we have the ESPN Plus challenge, right, with Disney. Obviously, Disney's got big pockets. We'll see how much of a threat that could be to DraftKings. But I think they do say that FanDuel and DraftKings are the early movers. They really know their markets well. And I think Wall Street was encouraged by the fact that the company said that we're very confident of becoming free cash flow positive next year.
Mm-hmm. Well, David, this has been great stuff. Really appreciate you coming on and sharing your thoughts, sharing the history. I feel like this was a little bit of a history lesson going back all the way. I should also mention that you had a great history lesson not too long ago when the Fed was actually starting their rate hike cycle. You went back to 1994, that previous cycle of hikes, and did a lot of analysis. So it's always great to have your analysis on. And folks can get more of David Saito Chung every day, not every day, but almost every day on IBD Live. He's a frequent host, frequent panelist, also very active on Twitter. Dave, what's your preferred Twitter handle? Because I know you have two.
Thanks, Justin. Really, honored. Really honored and privileged to be on the podcast again. And you were referring to an earlier podcast regarding how the market reacted to the rate hikes of 94, 95. And I think those that if you go back to that podcast, I think there's a little bit of nugget that can be sort of applied to what's going on right now in the current 2022 to 2023 rate hike cycle and the stock market. In terms of Twitter, I'm active on two handles or on X. One is at SAITOCHUNG, at Saito Chung. And the other one is uniform to all of us at IBD, at IBD underscore D Chung.
Yeah, perfect. Well, thanks again for coming on. And
thank you, guys. Really it was fun. Yeah.
Okay. And I know you're what is it? A Cleveland fan. So hopefully your team does pretty okay.
I've got all my fingers crossed for the next several games. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see if they can make the playoffs. That's kind of like a Super Bowl for me. So
yeah, very good. Well, that'll wrap it up for us this time around. Thank you very much for watching our game highlights. And make sure you turn in. We've got another great game next week. John Bollinger will be joining the show. Of course, he is of the Bollinger Band Notoriety. So that'll be a great, great chat with him. So hope you tune in for that. And thanks a lot for watching this time around. We'll see you next time. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast if you haven't already. We'd really appreciate it. You can also send us your questions and comments to investingpodcast@investors.com. We would love to hear from you and may use your comments on an upcoming episode. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only, and nothing should be construed as a recommendation to buy, hold, or sell any securities. Make sure to consider consulting with your financial advisor before making any investment decisions.